And we, does anyone have any public comment? Yeah.
I have two public comments. Number one is I would suggest that you not hold public hearings on the same night as your regular select board meeting because they do have a tendency to run over.
It seems that way, doesn't it?
Yes. The second thing is the listers have informally decided to pursue or to go ahead with the townwide reappraisal. Stay tuned, but we are going to start the process.
Okay. Review of the agenda. I have two items. We have a catering permit from Silo Distillery and a liquor license for Tebow General Store. Does anyone have anything else to add?
Need to add the radios and the VLCT passive grant.
Does that go with the radios?
No. That'd be for the town hall or here, wherever we decide, but it doesn't fit that.
I've got one delete F that's left over from previous agenda.
Any other inclusions, dissolutions?
Yeah, I've got an addition under town meeting items. I would like to add that we formally approve and adopt the accounting changes that are included in the budget.
I need a motion on these if there's none others. No others? Anybody? If not, I move that we approve the agenda with the various additions we just spoke of.
So moved.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay. Recurring items, approval of 1210, 1227, and 108 minutes. Have you got any corrections for those?
Just eyeball them real quick. I looked at them before, but I'm not sure.
Karen?
Yes?
Were you here for something on the agenda, or did we miss something that you were...
No, I'm just here as a person of the public.
So under the 12... which one is this? December 18th minutes under F, employee pay raises.
Say that again?
Under F, employee pay raises.
Uh-huh.
The last part says motion was amended by Scott, seconded by John, reflect VLCT rates unanimous. That's not what the amendment was. That's not what the board approved. What the board, the amendment was to, for the board to develop a pay scale.
Consistent with VLTCs?
No, the VLC, no, not con- that VLCT's compensation survey is just a source of information, but what the board approved is that the board would develop pay scales and compensation packages.
Okay.
So should both VLCTs be struck.
Yeah, that wasn't really part of the motion.
I think you said VLTC's...
I just referenced their compensation
wage,
survey.
Their wage survey.
Yeah, they had a compensation survey. That's a, it's a benchmark.
Yes.
But that wasn't part of the motion.
I have it.
So what else is on here?
Oh, there's one of those. Thank you.
Any other questions to this particular minutes?
I think there's it's moot now, but I think the numbers under J are wrong. I think it was 28,381 and then 50,000 offset, if I remember right.
Was that for warrants?
Yeah, no, it was just for the budget. And it's also, I'm talking...
I'm not sure that is incorrect.
Okay.
And the main reason is that we were originally... that adds up to 176,000.
So it was only 440?
And the reason that it's different from the next version, the next budget version, was that we changed and put in 50,000 to offset taxes.
Oh, okay, so it was changed
so
the next time.
This, according to this particular night,
gotcha.
These figures are correct.
That was the previous iteration. Gotcha.
Because it's covered under C, 4C, in the next 7 minutes.
Gotcha. But it also, it should, under J, it should make sure it references the general budget surplus. The heading of that is the highway budget. But this was actually the breakdown of the general fund surplus.
So are you happy with these minutes? So
yeah,
we'll just do them one at a time.
With those changes, yeah.
Unless, okay. So I need a motion.
So moved.
All those in favor of the changes in those draft minutes?
Which ones are they?
Those are 12-18.
Okay, thank you.
I'll second that, by the way.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So now let's go to the 12-27 minutes.
Maybe under three, it refers to the contribution in lieu of taxes. I thought we talked about that technically her donation is not in lieu of taxes.
What?
Three, under.
Just take out in lieu of taxes, Cindy. Anything else? Any other problems with these minutes? I move that we accept the minutes of 12:27.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, now we have one more. These are the ones of January 8th. These include the hearing and then the regular meeting.
The comments that are attributed to me are not correct. It's missing some comments. I there were some other comments I made. If we're going to capture people's comments in this, which it looks like we did,
yeah,
but
send me them.
Sure, I'll send you them. I would also say that it's not appropriate to attribute comments in the minutes to somebody who wasn't there.
I did.
Yeah, you did.
or?
Joe McLean.
There was something said about Joe McLean had approved at a site visit.
Said Mr. Brickner reported that Attorney Joe McLean had reviewed the documents, and yes, they were, are in compliance.
I'm curious. Okay, I mean, maybe so. Ben said that.
Mr. Brickner reported that Attorney Joe McLean had reviewed the documents, and yes, they are in compliance.
Okay. Yeah, I'll say more later. I spoke to Joe yesterday. So.
Okay, so can we just, if there's going to be wordsmithing of any significance, we should put it off.
Yeah, let's get it right.
So you're not going to do, you won't, we are not going to, we're going to pass over these minutes for tonight?
Yeah.
Okay. Then, warrants for approval, I have right here. We have check warrant 19071 and this is a corrected warrant to reflect revision in pay for one of the employees, and the total amount is $8,493.49. And then there is a accounts payable warrant 19072 in the amount of $39,051.98. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
I have a
discussion question.
Okay.
That falls under this. I submitted an invoice for excavator work done 3 years ago. I think I gave it to you a month or 6 weeks ago, and I haven't seen it show up on the warrant. And I was wondering if you had an update on that.
Well, I'm not quite sure what to do with that, and I think that warrants a discussion, but it is... I'm not quite sure what to do with that. I think we should put that on a discussion. In a normal situation, if you got a bill that was three years overdue or nearly 3 years overdue, you'd say, you know, what am I doing here? The other thing is, I assume that was a FEMA situation, and there's no document in the FEMA thing that is there.
Yes, it is.
Not in the documents that are on in the thing. There's a document there for that amount of money, but it goes to a different contractor on that particular work.
Okay. Well, let's not spend any time on that.
All those in favor of approving these warrants?
Aye.
Any opposed? Then we have approved the warrants. Okay, road foreman report. Jim?
I don't have a whole lot. I did, I don't know when it was, but they came in and flushed the drains at the shop because they were plugged. It was Dimmick, not Dimmick, so I don't remember the name of it right now, but anyway, he highly recommends that we get that tank pumped out again, that oil separator.
Will that make it till spring, or is that something you want to do this winter?
No, I don't think we'd. Better dig it up this right now, so that is something we're going to have to deal with in the spring. Just
okay.
Get that dug up, and he said they'd really come in and flush the drains out. He got them all working. I guess they were having an issue with the front one, way up to the front of the building, that they couldn't get really to take water, and he got it cleaned out. So. And then pretty much we're just changed out one, two, three cotton edges on the. On the plows, got them cleaned and fixed, and just kind of doing that right now in between the storms. And I got to get the hot box out and get up on Howell Hill because I got some holes to go up and add a It's not going to get bigger and bigger every day. So, and then the sand, I don't know if anyone's paid much attention to that one, if they like it, don't like it, or what the deal is there, but we're mixing it right now with that 3/8 stone, that brown sand, and then kind of mixing it a little bit stronger on the stone side and try to get it to stretch out a little bit more for us. But, and we don't seem to be fighting with it to get it out of the bodies either.
I think it's doing a great job on the road, personally. I assume that they decided that they could bring that stuff after the first of the year for that price that you negotiated.
It took me some begging, but yeah, we have it done.
I kind of figured.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Anything else?
That's it.
Those bids are going to be, those RFPs are going to be advertised on Friday, and that's going on state bid site tomorrow. And John Harrington's got a couple other places that we can publish those. And so they should be going out, and then we'll get them back in. And just so you know, that price that John gave us a week ago is incorrect. We're at $698,000 or $89,000, something like that. He made a mistake and didn't add the reclaiming in. Anything else? Jim? Any questions? Okay, we've got a certificate of highway mileage that we have to fill out. This is just the same miles as we've had before. And we just have to... because we haven't changed anything, I think we just have to sign it. So I guess we have to just approve this certificate. Because we've changed nothing. So I need a motion, or maybe I'll make the motion, to approve this certificate of highway mileage, which lists zero mileage of Class 1 road, 14.65 miles of Class 2 road, 47.75 miles of Class 3 road, 1.383 miles of state highway. And that's 63.783 miles. And then there are no miles of Class 1 lane, 6.11 miles of Class 4 roads, and 5.19 legal trails.
Is that any legal trail?
Pardon?
Is that much legal trail?
That's what it says. I have seen these certificates before, and I can go back and check, but I assume they have...
No, that's correct.
I assume they have the correct numbers.
Yep.
And we haven't changed anything, so all we've got to do is sign. So, any questions for that motion? All those in favor of the certificate of mileage, sending it in as such?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay. We need all the selectmen signatures here. And so you need to sign on the second page. And then I'll make sure that gets sent back. Town meeting items. Do we want to? I think some people are here for the adoption of the zoning ordinance. I'm not sure. And this doesn't mean that we're necessarily going to adopt it, but there's next steps. I feel that this town meeting items are going to take a while. Do we want to deal with the zoning thing first, and so some people can get out of here if they so choose, and take this out of order?
Sure.
So, we need to determine whether we want to adopt the zoning ordinance as is, whether we want to make slight modifications and adopt it, if we're going to make any major changes in it, then we would have to do that and then ask for another, have another hearing, or we can also say we don't like it at all and we can throw it back to the Planning Commission. So the topic is up for discussion.
I don't know that I have enough for everybody. There's a few extra copies, but I circulated copies of basically three proposed changes that the board could consider and adopt. One of them emanates from a recent settlement discussion.
I'll just look over your shoulder.
One emanates from a recent settlement discussion. We made a promise. We as a board made a promise to, within that settlement discussion, that we would adopt townwide sound standards that was equivalent to what was in the settlement discussion by way of either adopting a standalone zoning, a standalone noise ordinance, which wouldn't apply to permits but would apply to all property owners, or amended in the zoning regs, or both. But at any rate, the first one is basically putting in the sound provision that that we promised to do into the new zoning regs. The other two have to, all of these are, I spoke to at the hearing, so none of these should be a surprise. The other two have to do with industrial uses and the consistency with the town plan. What the regs say is exactly opposite to what the town plan says. So in the town plan, the language from the town plan is actually quoted in the reasoning paragraph of the proposed changes. And I'll read it for those who don't have a copy of it. But basically, the zoning regs prohibit all industrial uses in the village district. But our town plan says, and I quote, light commercial and industrial activities and primary retail establishments shall be located within or adjacent to the village area. So if we prohibit all industrial uses in the village district, it would be inconsistent with the town plan. So we should modify industrial with just heavy industrial, so that the only prohibited use in the village district would be heavy industrial, because that was the intent of the town plan, was to ensure that heavy industrial was located elsewhere.
Is there a definition of heavy industrial?
If you look in the zoning reg, I don't know if it provides examples, but you know, we're talking factories, you know, big kind of.
Just the conflict, and you're adding an adjective onto the industrial, and it's like, well, what's the definition of that?
Right. No, I don't know that the town plan or the zoning regs define industrial, so it's in the glossary of the zoning regs.
Okay.
Yeah. And then in parallel with that, in the rural district, it actually allows, it only prohibits heavy industrial in the rural district and allows light industrial. But the town plan says, and I quote, except for new home-based businesses, secondary retail or existing commercial or industrial activities, new commercial or industrial activities not associated with home-based businesses shall not be located in the rural areas. So basically, no industrial, unless it's already existing or unless it's associated with a home-based business. So what I suggested is that we replace heavy industrial with industrial not associated with home-based businesses so that it's consistent with the town plan. I did talk to Joe McLean about this yesterday, so I talked it over with him. We talked over the whole consistency thing. So. But those are the three proposals.
So the changes of the sound, what's the current levels that's in the zoning regs? Is there, no, in the zoning regs is written. What does this call for in there?
It's just that. That's it.
Okay.
That's the only, yeah. So we replace it with that, which is from the settlement, basically. So those are the proposed changes. So I move that the board make these three changes in the document to the proposed zoning regs.
You want to wait and see if there are any
suggestions? Has other changes, yeah.
Or any other board members wish to comment on what they might like to change, or whether you want to adopt it as is, or whether you want another hearing, and whether or not these changes would constitute changes that would require another hearing. I don't know what the threshold is.
They would cross that threshold, yeah.
Then I would suggest that we not necessarily adopt them until we see what other kinds of changes might want to be coming here down the pike. We have some people here I know that are here to discuss this. And although we cannot have a hearing because it is not a warned hearing,
yeah. We
need to figure out what our process is going to be going forward. So if there are a lot of other things that people feel need to be changed, rather than have a second hearing, have to have a third hearing, I think we better hear out people
for
specific issues.
Sure.
Anybody? Yeah.
I noticed, and I read this not yesterday, but I noticed that there's not a difference in the way sound is treated for between residential, commercial, and industrial uses. And I think that's an important consideration, because not only is the duration of sound with commercial and industrial very different, but the level of sound acceptable at a residence really is not necessarily the level of sound that should be accepted by the town for commercial and industrial. And also duration, I think, should be, not for residential, but duration should be addressed as well. That was the only thing I saw.
So how would you change that?
Well,
yeah, so we thought this
I don't, thing. You know, I can't answer that. But I haven't looked into it to the level that you guys
have. Yeah, I can speak a little bit to that, because when we were drafting... when we were drafting what is here, we went through a lot of those gyrations. And the challenge is, like, there are some towns out there that they have much more complicated sound provisions. And they do distinguish between the character. And they have all sorts of gradations. It's like, I'm trying to think of some of the ones that we looked at, but... some of them get pretty complex. And so there's this, you know, balancing act between having a super complex sound ordinance versus a really, really simple one. And it's just, you know, what you're describing is it's a tough one to write. It's a really hard one to write.
I'm sure it is, but I think that excessive sound is a hard thing to live with as
well.
So I think it's important. I also think that these regulations are laws, and the zoning board sits as a quasi-judicial body, and they're lay people sitting on a quasi-judicial body. And I think to help them out to the greatest extent possible, these regulations should be clear so that they can be applied, not interpreted all the time. And there's always going to be some interpretation. But judges apply laws, and they interpret, but they apply laws, and they're professionals. And we have a bunch of lay people sitting on a board that are going to be dealing with law, because regs are laws. And I think it's really important to make everything as clear as possible so they can be easily applied by people and not open to too much interpretation. There's always going to be some, but too much, because that's where lawsuits come from. If you don't regulate, if you don't apply the laws consistently, people get their noses bent out of shape, and that's where the town's going to end up with lawsuits. I think, my own personal opinion.
There's a, under Act 250, because basically what you have in front of you is kind of a version of the Act 250 standard.
Mm-hmm.
The Act 250 standard also has a qualitative component, mm-hmm. so you can prohibit noises that are qualitatively offensive, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But that is kind of, to your point, for lay people, really difficult to apply. And that's actually why you don't see a qualitative noise standard here.
So you think this is better?
It's better in terms of being able to enforce it. Because a qualitative standard...
Okay.
I mean, we went back and forth on this, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And because originally this sound provision had a qualitative standard, and we ended up dropping it because of basically the argument that it's pretty hard to... You may end up with some pretty inconsistent results
that
trying to enforce a qualitative standard.
Okay.
And so this was sort of the best attempt to have a quantitative standard that could be more easily enforced.
Okay. Fair enough. But I would like somebody to look at the different standards, different uses.
And just to give folks in the audience a little bit more color to this, so the standard... There's some consistency here with what was there before, but basically the general standard is 70 decibel at the property line. That's kind of your daytime, if you will.
The property line meaning going...
It's a vertical wall.
Imagine the vertical wall.
From the ground to the heavens is your, is your property line. And then it cannot exceed that level beyond that point. So... and that's a pretty typical standard. The other part of this is it has a nighttime standard that drops the noise standard quite a bit, so that it needs to be quieter during, you know, between 10 o'clock and 7:30 in the morning.
What levels are those?
45 decibel, so it's pretty low.
And going into that, say we were to have an easement on your property, and say in my particular situation, I've got the telephone, like the main telephone lines that go through there, and they put their main hub on my property. If it exceeds that limit, who has right cause in order to take something to the city?
So, what do they have?
It's the main hub for the. It's not a transformer. It's the main hub for the telephone lines. Whenever that wheels up, it actually makes quite a bit of noise. Mm. So if you pass an ordinance that puts that out, do I have a place in order to go after the telephone company based upon...
You would.
I say we make it lower.
But that's the nighttime standard.
Well, I mean, it varies because, I mean, being out in the woods, I mean, that's the only thing that you could possibly hear. But so whatever that standard is... I would have to test it.
You haven't tested it?
I haven't had a standard to go by to see where it's at. All I know is that I can hear it, and I don't like it.
Probably not that high, but it's probably the frequency of the level.
It depends. Like, and usually whenever it winds up and it starts getting loud, that's whenever they come out and pull the board and try to fix it. But the question still is if it's... does get loud, because I've wondered that, like, who could I go to in order to get this, you know, like, loud monstrosity off of my property?
Go to the town.
For all we know, because they're considered a public service, there may be exemptions in state law.
See, that's why I'm asking. Like,
I don't know that there are.
Well, yes, but somewhere along the line, somebody gave them an easement for that.
Yeah. No, I understand that, but if the easement then would be in conflict with what the town puts into place, where would the resolution come from?
The only scenario I can think of that John just brought up, because I'll give you an example. You get a wind turbine, and that's permitted by the PUC. So they're going to have an entirely different sound standard based upon their permit.
No matter what the town says.
Yeah, so that permit will rule. So your cause of action would be based on that sound from that permit.
I got you.
So this would fill all the other gaps, if you will, though.
So here, that speaks a little bit to my point. If you've got something that's not residential, and I hear the difficulty that you all had in trying to put this on paper, but
yeah.
70 decibels all day long, or even for a couple hours and then it stops and another couple hours, that's pretty noxious to people in the town.
It's a 1 hour standard, so it can only do that for
an hour, and then they stop for 15 minutes and start again in an hour. You know, people need to be protected from that sort of thing.
No, it's a little bit different than that, though.
Okay.
It's actually a 1 hour average. So if it were low and then high, you would do it. You would take a slice of time,
mm-hmm.
and look at what the average is over that 1 hour average. So,
but that's for over the 70 decibels.
Yeah.
But even up to all day long, or half a day, or so. You know, that's why I think industrial should have a different.
Absolutely. I hear what you're saying. We kind of went through this. We went through this soup to nuts, like, over many months.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a different, some sounds have banging, you know, mm-hmm. has different characteristic than a hum, right? So you'll see some ordinance out there that actually distinguish between different characters of sound. And that too, from a drafting standpoint, starts to get complex.
Yeah, no, I understand.
And so there is this thing called an instantaneous slow response maximum, and that accounts for the, you know, that kind of thing. Somebody doing something instantaneously loud, and that can't exceed 80 decibels.
So would the noise ordinance that you referenced before address any of this?
No.
No, it would not.
No. So just to give you an example, and this doesn't have an average at all, even if somebody, pick your scenario, some big clanging noise, mm-hmm. and it exceeded 80 decibels in that moment, then that violates the sound ordinance. So any instantaneous sound, basically, that exceeds 80 decibels would be a violation.
Currently?
No, not currently.
Okay.
All the new ones. So if somebody were to go out and say, shoot a gun, then therefore it would go over that 80 decibels.
Yeah, I have to profess that I am no expert on all this, on the decibel and the slow response maximum, but the concept is, yeah, right. And there are also customary uses, right? So there are allowances for customary uses and things like that. And I think pretty arguably that you can say in where you live in a rural town that people shooting a gun is kind of a customary thing. I live with it. I would never call. I'd never call anybody. Somebody shooting a gun. Unless they're doing it for, like, all day. And then you just call your neighbor. You know, we don't turn them in.
I think what this is trying to do is establish a base level that everybody can follow. It's establishing something that you can expect from your property owners, as well as set a level for property owners as to, hey, I actually have neighbors, I need to pay attention to them, but also allow them to be able to do what it is that they need to do. You know, we can come up with all kinds of scenarios about this noise level and that kind of noise coming from this, and it's for the number of residents, the size town that we have, and then trying to enforce something like that is going to be either A, impossible, so you do nothing, or going to be extremely difficult and extremely cost prohibitive for both sides of the equation.
And I hear that. I mean, I understand that, but I really think that industrial should have a different standard. Oh, there was one other thing. When you guys talked about windmills and put the rules about windmills, there's a sound associated with windmills that has been nationally very problematic. And it wasn't addressed. I don't know if you knew about that or wanted to not do anything about that, but apparently people who live near windmills go nuts because of this constant. And it's a low-level sound, but it's constant, and it drives people crazy. So I don't know if you want to revisit that as well.
Yeah, that's a tough... Well, but again, as I referenced earlier, that would escape this provision because that's going to be in the PUC from it. So if somebody puts up a wind turbine in Pomfret, the PUC is going to issue that permit, and whatever the sound provision is going to be in that permit. So this is not going to apply to that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's usually like right around 46, 48 decibels. Yeah. But it's 46, 48 decibel like this, like 24 by 7.
Yeah. You know? No, people go nuts.
Yeah.
Really, they get illnesses.
Yeah.
Are there any other considerations anyone would like to bring forth around this issue as to what we might or might not change?
My primary concern is with the accessory dwelling unit. Currently, if you fall under an accessory dwelling unit, you do not have to pull a permit. And this is a pretty substantial change in order to have to pull a permit, because it starts the process of reappraisal and going down that road. The whole point of having an ADU is because everyone knows here that the price of rental properties is astronomical. Like, the fact that you can't get a decent one-bedroom apartment for less than $1,000 out in the middle of the country is absurd. I mean, there's no reason for it. We have a lack of affordable housing in the area, and the ADU was put in place in order to have someone in the middle class provide an affordable housing unit for somebody who needs it. And proposing that now you have to go through a permitting process and having your property subjugated to additional taxes because of that, all that's going to do is increase the amount of rent that person would need to pay by we're nullifying having an ADU whatsoever. So I am not quite sure what the rationale for increasing the barrier to affordable housing is. So I'm just wondering what the thought process is in including permitting for the ADU where there was none before.
Billy or John, do you want to answer that?
The thought process was that the unit should meet the setbacks, and that the zoning administrator would make sure that that happens. The other thing is that if it is there should be some consideration whether or not that unit wants to be divided up as a separate piece, whether there's a 2-acre parcel with that piece or not. So the fact that there's a permit required does not preclude the fact that we're not encouraging that.
but in and of itself requiring a permit is creating another hurdle to having affordable housing. Because it's passing it on. So if you're saying that you have to go through the entire permitting process, then you're going to incur more cost to the person who's trying to develop the housing for someone in order to keep it low.
I guess that doesn't the permit, you know, process good for everybody? It requires a septic, it requires a permit for that.
Which is at the state level. Right. The state requires that, not the local
required,
level.
But I tend to disagree with you, frankly. I think it's good that we do have a permit. And in fact, if there wasn't a permit, the listeners would know about it if a permit was pulled. But if the permit wasn't pulled, they'd find out about it sooner or later anyway, and there'd be a tax associated with it. So I'm not sure what you're trying to say.
Well, what I'm trying to say is that the taxes and the appraisal process happens whenever they decide, like we had heard earlier, that they're going to go through another city or citywide tax appraisal. And that happens at that level. Pulling a permit whenever the state doesn't require a permit is just another way for your local government to get involved and create another barrier at a local level. We have enough people at the state and federal level that's putting up hurdles to meaningful change.
I'll agree with you about rental cost taxes and all that. But as far as permitting it, if you are making changes to your property or changing the value of your property, and so it's only fair that you should be taxed on the appropriate changes you made, negative or positively, in value to your property, to be fair to everybody else in town that's paying their fair, whether you want to call it fair or not, but their fair value of their property. So
yeah, but what the whole point of the ADU was to embolster a fair housing cost in a place that doesn't have it. It was a meaningful loophole in the process, because if you're a homeowner and you can say, okay, for what the rental level is at X, it would cost me Y in order to create this, and I get to circumvent the taxes, which makes the housing more affordable. Like, that's the whole point of it.
The loophole was made so that you could have it where you wouldn't have been able to have it before. It didn't mean that you didn't have to pay your fair taxes.
But that comes back around whenever you do a reappraisal of everything at a citywide level, as opposed to the good of the permit does what? What is it helping?
It is making sure that all of these structures that come into town that are above that 20 by 20 or 15 by 15
whatever that
threshold is, that you will get a permit for that, that you will abide by the same rules and standards that everyone else has to.
Who's anyone else?
That wants to build any kind of home or accessory dwelling unit, they have to get a permit. They have to get a permit so that they follow the guidelines. The setbacks from the side property lines, the setbacks from the road, that there's a proper place for a sewer there. All of those things are there to protect all of the residents in Telford. And quite frankly, it isn't fair to expect that most of the residents in Telford are going to bear the burden because an accessory dwelling unit shouldn't get taxed until there's a reappraisal because there's no permit. That's unacceptable. Everyone should get taxed for their unit that they're living in. That's only fair. You shouldn't expect you're going to get a free ride. And nobody should get a free ride. No, probably you shouldn't get taxed by that Bob White Down chicken house. That being said, those permits are there to protect the neighbors so that everyone plays by the same rules. Everyone has an acceptable sewer system, everyone has an acceptable water system, and a large enough lot so that they can get one, because here in Vermont, we have no public water, we have no public sewer. Those are there for protections for everyone, all of the residents in town. And I don't think anyone should be exempt from those for a dwelling unit.
So you're bringing up two separate things. Is it for protection or is it for tax rec?
It's both.
Okay.
Why should you not be taxed and yet all your neighbors with a similar size house be taxed? Why should you not be taxed?
The point of the ADU in and of itself, because it's not a typical building permit, because if there wasn't such a thing as an ADU, then it would just be a building permit. If you're building something, you get a building permit. The entire emphasis on an ADU is because we're in a housing crisis. So if you're going to make a provision for an ADU and even create such a thing, it's in address to address the fact that we're in a housing crisis. So what's the burden on the town if you're fulfilling a need that they needed to obviously address because of the overtaxation of the area?
Well, let me just ask you this, and then I think we should move on. Do you feel that if that accessory dwelling unit has a family with five children, that accessory dwelling unit should do something to pay something to educate those students and to provide the roads for those parents to drive back and forth to their jobs and all of those amenities that we provide? Shouldn't that unit have to participate as well in those kinds of funding mechanisms?
If a family of five is living in an efficiency or one bedroom, which is defined as an accessory dwelling unit, then no, they have much bigger problems. So, but now a secondary question is that we're talking about building on and building something. What about existing structures? Because one big gray area in the ADU process is existing structure. So if an existing structure that falls within the size, how does that come into play within your permitting process? That is, there is a proposed permitting process. Because at the state level, there is none. As at the town level, there still is none. So if you have a detached garage and you want to turn that into a mother-in-law, how do the new rules apply? If it has already been piped into your septic, if it's already been piped into your electric, and so on and so forth, how do the new rules apply?
I think, also part of having to go through the permitting process for it is that's how the state gets notified. If you have a two-bedroom approved septic on your property and you're adding an accessory dwelling unit or another bedroom, then the only way the state's going to be notified that that's there is by going through the town permitting process. And the state's going to come and say, hey, you've got to upgrade your septic because you've only got a permit for two bedrooms and your septic's built for that, and now you have to build
it. Right, and again, like that's if you're building something else on, which again triggers this permit. So my question is, what if it's something existing? How does that work? It's already tied into everything that we have. So what is the permitting process entail? So if I want to take my garage and turn it into an ADU,
because it wasn't part of the septic plan, then that may change that depending on if your septic was overbuilt for your existing home, which is why that's why there are permits in place to make sure that you check off that certain things have been done.
Which then, again, would trigger reappraisal of the property and all that. So,
you have a bathroom in a garage, and you want to change that into an apartment. You're now adding bedrooms. And septic
is based on bedrooms.
Right. It's not based on that.
No, I understand how a septic system works, but what I'm saying is that what is the benefit to the overarching community for these changes? Because it just seems like it's another way of taxation as opposed to providing a solution to a problem that the ADU was put in place to provide.
It's been many years since I was on the Planning Commission, but it was never my understanding that the accessory dwelling was put into place specifically to address low-income housing. I was under the understanding that it was done because, as you say, sometimes people need to put mother-in-law apartments in their garages and other things, but it's not to address any particular class of individual. It's to address a type of development that, as you've already heard, entails changes of permits for septic and other things of that nature. But I don't... I think that it's erroneous to believe that the only reason that that provision exists is to provide the cheapest housing as possible for anybody. Why would it...
It's completely erroneous. I mean, it's been a factor that you think is an additional factor.
It's not
erroneous. So.
All I'm saying is that you're arguing that the whole reason for that provision is that it's supposed to create affordable housing.
That's one way of doing it.
And I'm just saying that that is not the sole reason for that purpose.
No, sure. It's not, but it is possibly a reason for doing it. So, okay, I'm just saying, well, what is the benefit to changing the provisions from the way they are now to the proposed way? And that's why we're here, is to discuss the reasoning for changes.
So that we know everybody's in compliance is the short answer for me.
So is there a way to do that? To find out if it is within compliance without costing the people money on the back end that would be wanting to do this.
Cost of money being the permit itself.
No. Because if you want $35, $100, that's one thing. But if you're talking about triggering a reappraisal of a property, that could be substantially more.
Yeah, but so what you're wanting to do is make your property worth more without paying the taxes in that. There's
because I can get a permit to the presumed tenant.
You get a permit so that when you make changes, so that the town is aware the changes are going to be made and that you're doing things correctly and you've met standards. And then it also alerts them, yes, so that they can come and appraise the difference in value so that you can be a tax accordingly. Now, you're saying just wait until the reappraisal. Now, a reappraisal is done because, you know, houses are bought and sold, and over a period of time, you know, you get out of whack on the scales as to how things are getting reappraised. But that's a little different than just saying, you know, let's put $50,000 into my house and you know, it was reappraised last year. Now, I'm tax-free on that for the next 9 years.
So you redo your kitchen. You redo your kitchen, so you think that I should be able to come in and tax you more for it, right, initially. Because it wouldn't be fair if you did that.
Creating a change of use.
Right.
So, say, you blow out you have a living room and you want to make your kitchen bigger.
You don't need a permit for that.
You have to get a permit for it?
No, you don't.
No.
Why?
But you're saying that you're changing your living room, but in the kitchen, so, you know, and if it made your house worth more, then I should be able to tax you more on it.
Eventually.
The next day.
The appraisal happens, yes.
Exactly. And that's my argument, is that, yeah, I can put a bunch of cash in my property, mm-hmm. and then I'm going to get clipped and on the back end of it. And it's the same argument to where, if I want to turn my garage into a living space, I'm going to get taxed on it eventually. So why is it that it has to
happen?
That's
a change of use. I think if it's a change of use, then you have to own up to it and pay the price. But if it's just a garage with a toilet in there, fine. And you're permitted for it, fine. But if you're going to change it to a bedroom and a kitchen and everything else, and you're changing that the use of that septic system drastically, But inside, you're not. You're basically just rearranging things, building some walls, putting in a bedroom or whatever. But you're still change of use.
So you're saying that it's the same to you as in if I have a garage and I want to just put a toilet in there, so whenever I'm...
If it's permanent,
if I'm cleaning my tools and I want to put a toilet in there, you're saying it's the same thing. Because I've just changed.
There hasn't been a toilet in there before. You have to get a permit from the state to increase your
correct. Which should be at the state level, not the local level, because there's already the provisions at the state level for the changes that you're addressing. You're saying that if you're wanting to put a toilet and change the use of that building,
well, I think
and they accept it. So then, therefore, that's already trumped at the state level. So therefore, I shouldn't have to get a permit at the local level for that.
Well, you've kind of come around in a circle here, because originally you were talking about building an accessory unit.
No, my question is...
Which is new.
Is changing...
Use.
Changing use in a garage ADU to an ADU.
I think that we understand what you're saying. My guess is the zoning regulation won't change, that you will still, if you build an accessory unit, you will get taxed on it, and you will have to get a permit for it. And the people that did the zoning regulation and probably the listers feel that you should be no different than all the other people that get taxed on accessory dwelling units. But because we have many other items to go through, in addition to just this, I'm going to say, are there any other questions or concerns that anyone has so that we can determine whether we're going to change these slightly, whether we're going to have another hearing, whether we're going to discuss changes later. While you're all here, if that's what you came for, this is your chance to express your concern, and then we're going to move on to all these other items that we have to get on with. After we figure out whether we're going to have another meeting to discuss these changes that we might propose or not. This is here to discuss process, not go into the zoning regulations. There's already been two hearings, there may be another, but we've got a few other things relating with town meeting that have just got to happen today. So, are there any other comments or questions? So, I'm looking for a motion on the board as to whether we want to discuss these perhaps changes at another meeting. I assume because Scott has brought up these changes, we are not going to adopt it tonight, so we need to come up with a process as to how we're going to proceed.
So I would, I'd like to put a motion on the table, but before I do that, I'd like to answer your question about process. If we do wish to make changes, and so we will have to warn another hearing if we adopt these changes, because they are substantial. That would require another hearing.
That is correct.
But if we warn another hearing and then make changes, then we have to do another hearing after that.
We should make the changes now, before we warn the hearing.
Correct.
And so we, because there's no sense in having three hearings for the select board. So I guess I would think that we would have a special meeting perhaps to discuss the changes that we wish to make and not try and accomplish all of that this evening.
I would like to offer my motion, though, and see if it gets a second. I'd like to move that the board make the three changes drafted here in regard to the sound provision and industrial uses in the Village District and Rural District.
I'll second that.
Any discussion? Are those going to be all the changes that we make?
That's all I have.
Or are we going to discuss more changes?
I don't have any. Those are the only changes I have.
Could I make a comment?
Yeah.
At the meeting that we had, the hearing meeting, there were several comments from Alan Blackman, there were several comments from Nancy Matthews. This ordinance is in effect now for 150 days.
I don't think you should send it back to the Planning Commission because then we've got to hold another hearing. I might suggest that you might ask, if you wish, to have the Planning Commission, or maybe you want to listen to that tape of all the input that they had, and that perhaps make all of the changes so that it's done, or I guess you could adopt the changes Scott has, and then at another meeting adopt some others, but I'm not so sure there's a rush if that ordinance is in effect now for 150 days. Just a comment.
Well, it seems, to me, we've had the select board hearing. We've got, nobody else has any other changes. Nobody's come to the board with other changes.
Well, yes, but you also have, after, before they passed that on to us, they had some comments, and Mr. Blackmer had a couple of comments that were included, and we have not addressed those at all. If I were to have a preference, I would suggest we sit down with the Planning Commission and at some point, or a committee of us, two of us sit down with the Planning Commission and get all these changes and work out the kinks in them and then present them all at once and decide about those changes and then schedule a hearing. And I don't think there is any rush to do this. I'm not saying we shouldn't do it. Betsy had a criticism that we did this in the dead of winter and in the summer when it was vacation time. And that's valid. We did do those things. But if you have a hearing in another 50 days, it's still going to be in the dead of winter.
Not complaining about the dead of winter. That wasn't...
Well, the storm was a concern.
I mean, winter is half of our lives, so...
Well, there's a motion on the table, and we can still discuss it. But
I'm in favor of making these changes, but I would hold off on holding another hearing until we have.
Right, but we can still do all that.
But
it doesn't
still
it doesn't foreclose that
into it, so
right.
They're there.
Right, so we can still do that.
You ready, Sue? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Then we'll make these changes, and then we'll see how we're going to proceed further. Whether you want to adopt any of Mr. Blackmer's changes and Nancy's changes in there, and whether or not you wish to have a meeting with the Planning Commission or parts thereof to discuss what other inconsistencies might be there.
One commentary about Alan's. We talked about that during the hearing, and actually this isn't reflected in the minutes. Those would not be zoning reg changes, but what Alan asked for specifically, those would not be zoning reg changes.
So, moving on. Now we have town meeting items. The first thing, although this isn't the first thing we have to do, is deal with the budget corrections that have come forth from because of...
Let's all use this one.
Oh, thank you.
Can we... I thought I asked to do the approval of the county changes as the first item. Can we do that first?
Excuse me, what?
I had asked for the approval of the accounting changes to be the first item related to the budget and the agenda change. Can we do that first before we dig into
the
budget?
I'm not sure it makes any difference. But.
Okay.
Pretty clear.
Well, so just to leave that off, it was not known to me, and I don't know whether it was known to the rest of the board. But it wasn't known to me until after the auditors submitted their financial statement that we had actually made a change in policy.
Okay.
And I thought a lot about the policy changes that are now in the budget and referenced in the budget narrative. I traded an email with Chad a little bit yesterday. And so I understand the logic of the accounting changes. And I understand the rationale. But we didn't adopt those they just became part of the budget, and we haven't adopted them as a formal.
We don't have a policy, but
right?
We just change the way we do it.
But we should make a policy statement that we are adopting, that our policy is that, for instance, our policy is that when we have a surplus, that all expenditures related to that surplus, whether those expenditures are to reserve funds or line item expenditures, that they be incorporated in the budget.
Well, that way, one way or the other, so there's some consistency.
Yeah, the other reason I say that is because when people, I like to look back at minutes and go, oh, well, when did they decide to do that, and how did that come about? And, it would be good if we can have in our records, on this day, the board decided to change its policy and how it does its accounting. So
whether you simply have a policy, which the policy is, I'm on the fence about most of the time, but what they do is force you to do things, and force you to follow the process.
Right, in a consistent way.
But certainly looking back, if you make the change to the way you're doing things every year, it makes it very difficult to look back, because things then don't line up.
That's a whole nother, But so I would, so I'm okay. I don't object to the methodology that's now part of the FY21 budget. I get it. I understand what's going on. But I would like to see us as a board adopt it as, because we created a financial management policy committee. And this was one of the things that the financial management committee was supposed to, it's in their charge, was how to deal with surpluses. And so this policy should have come from that committee. And now we have it just kind of because of, by virtue of getting these spreadsheets. So all I'm saying is I would like to see us as a board state that this is what we're going to do from this point forward.
I'm happy to do it this way. Somebody, instead of just adopting a policy now, somebody ought to write something on it. Yeah. We ought to adopt that.
So what are you talking about specifically?
The order
of the years?
No, what I'm referring to is that, so for the last 3 years, when we had a surplus, we warned a separate article, and we did not, though it encompassed the expenditures associated with that surplus. Mm-hmm. And we did not build those expenditures into the budget.
Right.
And so now those expenditures are built into the budget, and they are leveled out with the fund balance. And so that's a change. We haven't done it that way. We haven't done it that way for the past 2 years. We've done something different for the past 2 years. And so this is, I would just like to see us adopt it as our policy.
Well, let me ask a question then. If Joe Smo gets up and says, I don't like, let's just pick one. I don't like that you're spending $3,000 on town maintenance, building maintenance. I want to modify the budget. And so they move that they strike that. Is our town meeting set up so that individuals can make motions to change line items in the budget?
Yep. But on the budget warrant article. So when the budget article comes up for a vote, people can say, yeah, I want to amend the budget, but I want to amend this line item and change this amount or whatever. But yeah, that can happen.
Okay. But that being said, you have to realize that if they pass the budget and there has been no discussion or reduction or change at town meeting, it is not a line item budget. In other words, we are not obligated, unless there's a change in the budget from the floor, we are not obligated to spend and only spend those line items, the money which is associated with them. In other words, if we have $20,000 in crack sealing and $10,000 in snow fence, and we don't get any crack sealing done because of the weather, and we don't buy any snow fence, this is not a line item budget. We can spend that money elsewhere unless someone has specifically said, we want to cut snow fence out of your budget. So, in other words, we are not obligated to stay within those divisions unless they have specifically said to amend the budget to take this line out or do something in that regard.
Okay.
This is not a line item spending right. budget. Right.
Okay. So then my question becomes, in tonight's version, we only have $90,000 on the paving reserve, and there are no numbers in that. I'm talking about lines 253 through 255. Those did have numbers.
You have to understand that I asked, and I wrote you all an email and gave you the figures from the change in the dispatch fees and the change in the ambulance fees and also the change in the library amount, which I made a mistake on. And I sent you that email, mm-hmm. and I explained to you then that I had asked Neil to give us these numbers, because if you're going to have to make up another $32,000, it's going to have to come from somewhere, or you're going to have to raise $32,000 in taxes. Right. So the only place it's going to come from is the fund balance.
Yep.
And so by taking out both the communications reserve, which we wanted to fund, and also taking out the town building reserve, we are able to stay within approximately the amounts that we were going to raise in taxes by four. We're down in raising taxes by about $3,400 or $3,500 by taking out those reserve amounts. And that's the only way you're going to come up with a 2.2 or 2.3% increase, unless we don't pay for the ambulance. Because that figure more than doubled. So I requested that, and as I explained to you, this is not a budget that is cast in stone, but in order to have something to discuss, because we have those increases, we have to start somewhere. I do not have any feeling. If you want to put all of the reserve money back in, it's fine with me, but we're going to have to come up with some money to do it.
No, so...
So I asked him to do that, knowing full well that was only a decision on my part to give us something to look at.
Right.
The board has to make that decision.
Right, and I understand that.
Do you still have a comment, Ellen? Your hand was up earlier.
I was just going to say that I think the town, and I've said this previously in an email, I think the town is going through a learning process with regard of how to handle surpluses from one year to another. I don't think that any one year has been duplicated in the way it's been handled. And I have trouble recognizing that as a policy that is in effect, or the learning process of figuring out what makes sense to the townspeople when they go to town meetings, and what works here establishes a policy.
So my question is, I'm actually leading up to something, and this is what I was trying to start with, the basic premise. There's going to be a warning in town meeting to ask the residents to spend the money, whatever money's left. And I agree, we should take whatever surplus and get the budget squared away. It's not a debatable thing. But my question is that if we put the $90,000 in the paving reserve, and the article that Scott has put out, people decide, no, we want to take all that money and use it for something else. Essentially, you're now you got to go to the next article on the budget and say they don't want it. They say no, we don't want you putting any money in reserves. So that decision comes from probably a previous article. Will we then have to go to line 254 when we pass the budget and take that out? It gets murky, you see what I mean? Because what we're doing now with our budget is, we got a budget and we've got to raise some money, okay? And you've got this block of money, and this is what we're proposing we're going to do. With the reserves, we already got that money, and so folding it into the budget makes it more difficult to understand because, especially now we have a motion that's going to give the voters an opportunity. I'm sure it's going to be quite a vigorous, we're not going to have a short town meeting, I don't think, because... But I think it's great. I think it's great that we're going to, or that Scott has proposed in this article to ask the people, because we kind of sit here as five people and go, well, maybe we should do this, maybe we should do that. And this will give the voters a chance to weigh in. That being said, if they weigh in and it's contrary to what we have on here, then it just muddies up the water, and so my proposal is that we don't do it this way. We do it the way we did, you know, before, because we're one thing is the budget, and we're saying to the taxpayer we need to raise taxes, and this is our budget. But this other is another lump of money, if you will. And we're going to ask them whether or not they may say, no, we don't want
to. All it is, to me, it's not going to muddy up the water. All it's going to do if they decide to pay, to use all of the surplus to pay down the taxes, is the $90,000 is going to come out of that line item, and it's just going to be applied to pay down the taxes as it would in any other way. It's really not going to mess anything up. I mean, it's built into the budget instead of a separate line item. But in the end, removing that, whether you're or not, you have a separate article, they have the right to do anyways. And so it's six of one, half dozen the other, doing it one way or the other. To me, but if it's all in the budget, it shows everything all in one place. And, you know, as far as I won't get into Scott's motion.
It makes no difference whether it's old money or new money. It's money. And I worked up a warning, which I didn't work on until late this afternoon, and Scott's article, or his article that he petitioned for, is ahead of the $176,000 to offset taxes. The fact of the matter is, unless his article is severely changed, there's going to be a heck of a tax increase because we don't have that money. With the $32,000 extra that's going to go to the ambulance, there isn't that money to apply to those various things. Now, that's okay.
They could be easily amended.
That's sure. Fine, too. All of those things are fine. The reason we went to this was that it would, or I felt, it would give a template that would be easy to follow for future select boards. None of us are going to be here forever. And it would only appropriate that money once in the budget, where you would see it every year in the same place. You wouldn't have to go to the articles and look for it there, and it should be much easier to follow in years to come. It certainly is a change. There's no question about it. And I guess if you don't want to do it this way, you don't have to. It's fine. But it should make it simpler in the long run.
I don't think it'll make it simpler if people want to change. If they want to change that number, then we've got to, in the middle of the meeting, we've got to monkey around with the numbers, you know, because it's going to change the way the budget looks.
Yeah, I mean, so I think there's pluses and minuses to both approaches, right? So in the, I'm just going to call it the old way for the moment, the old way like last year and the year before that, where we had a separate article that addressed the surplus, and we said, let's put some of it in the town building reserve, let's put some of it in rainy day reserve, let's use some of it to pay down taxes. And then we didn't have to futz around with anything, and we didn't have to alter the budget in that, and so there was no touch in the budget. And that kind of avoids that headache of having to right now in this budget, it's fairly clean. Fairly clean. Maybe, maybe not. If voters want to do something different with the surplus, we might know exactly to what line items we need to go to zero them out or you know, whatever we need to do to change them. But we do have to do that. So that is kind of the advantage of the old way. But I do see the logic in I do understand the attempt to get everything in the budget, all expenditures, including expenditures related to the surplus. And so from that sense, I do see, if we want to call it, you know, that greater visibility of all expenditures, so all right there. There's, as the budget narrative says, you know, you don't have to look to it. Nancy and I went back and forth over email, combing over town meeting minutes and articles, like, this year did that, this year did this, and we had to figure out whether to look at the minutes to figure out what was voted on, right? So there's a little bit of that goes on. So there's pluses and minuses to both. I don't know that one is necessarily better than the other, you know, at the end of the day. I would think, and I'm, you know, I don't know, different people may have different views, but I guess, you know, I could see some advantages to the way we were doing it before, and honestly, I think I kind of prefer to do it that, but I'm on board with doing it the way we're doing it now. There are some changes I'd like to see in what we're doing right now, but I agree with you, Frank. I think it's going to potentially make things challenging at town meeting if voters, and I do think, I mean, just for the record here, so everybody hears it, now that it will be on the warning, the reason, I think the way that we're now doing it gives voters very little choice in how to dispose of the surplus.